hard to find in the morning papers. It's hard to find in the magazines. It doesn't matter what show you tune in. It's hard to find on TV screen. But it's on talk radio. Truth is on talk radio. Turn it on, turn it up as loud as it'll go. Talk radio. Well, double talk is all you get. And you wanna hear it straight. There's a place to find all the answers. AM, FM, shortwave, talk radio. The truth is on talk radio. Turn it on, turn it up as loud as it'll go. Talk radio. Talk radio. The truth is on talk radio.
Welcome, my friends, to John Stadmiller's The National Intel Reporter. It is a pleasure to be with you. My name is Dave Champion, and I'll be guest hosting for John today. He is away attending the National Association of Broadcasters Conference, and he will be back with you on the very next show. Again, my name is Dave Champion. I do host my own radio show. It is called The Dave Champion Show, and you can listen to that anytime you'd like. It's on Accent Radio Network, who has a relationship with Republic Broadcast Network. However, you're welcome to go to the website anytime you want, which is www.davechampionshow.com. Let me tell you a little bit about myself so you know with whom you're going to be spending the next 2 hours. I'm 49 years old. I'm a former United States Army Airborne Ranger. I have a law enforcement background. I have 25 years of private sector business experience. I am a leader in the tax honesty movement. I have 15-plus years of studying various areas of law. And as I frequently like to say, I am the radio talk show host with a gun. And what I mean by that is I live in beautiful Pahrump, Nevada. And in Nevada, it's one of those wonderful, fantastic states where they do show some respect for the right to keep and bear arms. And consequently, there is no law in existence that prohibits the carrying of an exposed firearm. And so I do take advantage of that opportunity in exercise my right to keep and bear arms every single day. I get dressed, I put on my watch, I put on my holster, I put on my 1911, and I go about my business. So as you are listening to my voice now, coming to you from Pahrump, Nevada, I am sitting here wearing my 1911. I know John talks about the right to keep and bear arms, so I thought I'd let you know that I'm a vigorous supporter of the right to keep and bear arms. And it's a shame that I didn't have an opportunity to sit and talk with you shortly after the Heller decision was released a couple months back. That would have been an interesting dialogue. There are a lot of things that we could cover today, and I know John does a lot on the economy. So we might talk about, at this moment, a lot of the things that are going on with the government bailing out various financial institutions. For instance, they are bailing out AIG. They are not bailing out Lehman. What is going on with all of that? What's going on with the government choosing to bail out some enterprises, not choosing to bail out other enterprises? And where is the government's authority to bail out various corporations? Remember, we go back to Chrysler, when Chrysler needed to be bailed out? Well, now we're seeing it again and again and again and again on a broader level. So stay with me. When we get back from the break, we're going to talk about where the government gets the authority, if any, to do that, and what's going on right now. I'm Dave Champion, back in a moment.
Most of mankind's diseases have now been conquered. This medical breakthrough can save your life or the life of a loved one. Please listen. the answer to AIDS, hepatitis, A, B, and C, malaria, herpes, TB, most cancers, and many more of mankind's worst diseases has been found. Details of this amazing secret has been freely disclosed in Jim Humble's book, The Miracle Mineral Supplement of the 21st Century, available at miraclemineral.org. Read how, in five countries of Africa, over 75,000 cases of malaria and other diseases were successfully treated with this new mineral supplement. Learn more at miraclemineral.org. It also works with colds, flu, pneumonia, sore throats, warts, mouth sores, and even abscessed teeth. Download part one of this amazing book free at miraclemineral.org. Then, if you're satisfied, purchase part two for only $9.95 or the hard copy for only $19.95. Please enter RBN when prompted on where you heard about miraclemineral.org.
Men, are you urinating more frequently? Do you wake up to urinate? Now be honest, is your sex drive what it used to be? Don't ignore the warning signs. Prostate problems begin around age 40, and by 60, one out of every two men will have these symptoms, and they do not go away. Take Super Beta Prostate. It has 3,000 times more concentration of the key ingredient in saw palmetto. It's so powerful, you'd have to take 100 saw palmetto capsules in order to get the same health benefits of one Super Beta Prostate. Try it risk-free for 30 days and give your prostate the nutrition it needs. For a risk-free trial of Beta Prostate, call 1-800-362-5848. That's 1-800-362-5848. With Super Beta Prostate, you get results or you get your money back. Or log on to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click onto the Super Beta Prostate banner to learn more about the product. Here's something. It doesn't matter if you're white, black, red, purple, thin, fat, or oblong. If you're eating food, you need to clean out the inside of your body. Why? Because undigested food and toxic chemicals build up in the digestive tract every day. If you think this can't hurt you, think again. It already has. Indigestion, bloating, gas, irregularity, and constipation are all connected to this toxic buildup. Here's what you can do about it. Take a supplement called AlloCleanse. It's all natural, and it gently cleanses the entire digestive tract. All that leftover junk inside your body gets flushed away, and your bathroom habits suddenly become a whole lot smoother. Laugh all you want, but it's true. And it's why millions of people use AlloCleanse daily. They get more energy, they're healthier, and they look better. You'd be surprised. To try AlloCleanse risk-free, call 1-800-547-6603. That's 1-800-547-6603. Or log on to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click onto the AlloEase colon banner and learn more about this product.
Get ready for Real Talk Radio. You're listening to the National Intel Report with your host, John Stadtmiller.
All right, we are back. The topic that we're going to begin with today is the government bailing out private sector business. And I ask the question, where does the authority to do that? We can ask the question, is it wise? But I think the first question we should ask is, where is the authority derived under our constitutional system of government to do that? Now, in my lifetime, the first incident that I can remember of the government bailing out a corporation was the bailout of Chrysler. Now, there may have been incidents of that when I was younger and I wasn't paying attention, but that's the first one I'm aware of. By the way, if you'd like to get involved in the conversation, I apologize. Our call-in line is 800-313-9443. So if you'd like to be a part of the conversation, please do call in. The question is, where does the authority come from? Well, if we look at the Constitution, we ask a question about where the authority comes from. The conversation really has to take two different tacts. One of the tacts is, where does the government allege that the authority comes from? And are they correct? Secondly, what did the Founding Fathers say? What was said during the debates on the Constitution? Was there a factionalization? Which faction actually was predominant in that particular part of the Constitution? In order to know whether the allegations of authority, the claims of authority being made by the government today, really hold any water. Now, I don't have any respect for corrupt court decisions. So it doesn't matter to me if the Constitution clearly denies, by not enumerating, a power to the government. And some judge, some attorney in a black robe, and I don't care whether he was a trial court judge or an appellate judge, or it was an en banc decision, or whether it was the United States Supreme Court, I just don't care. I have no respect, and I will not show respect, for decisions that are obviously and plainly, I'll be kind and say, mistaken. So we could have a discussion about things like, well, what happened during the New Deal era? What kind of decisions did the U.S. Supreme Court make about interstate commerce and about necessary and proper provisions in the Constitution after FDR threatened to pack the court and so forth? We could have that discussion. But to me, that just sort of fills in some blanks. It's really somewhat irrelevant to the more direct conversation of, is it authorized by the Constitution? Because we all know, if you're listening to this radio network, you already know that a huge majority of what the government says is a bunch of crap. So I don't need to sit here and pitch you on the fact that they don't say very many credible things. You already know that. The question is, how do we sort through this and get down to what the truth really is? And how do we get as many people educated about what the truth is as possible so that as a nation, we can start influencing our legislature, now, our national legislature. Now, is it possible to influence Congress? Well, a lot of people say not anymore. A lot of people say that too much special interest money, too many lobbyists, too much power, that the average American really has no ability to influence Congress. And to a great extent, I think I agree with that statement. However, when there is enough squawking by the people, finally, if there's enough, it does get Congress's attention. Now, how do we know this? Well, we know this because the democratically controlled Congress just passed an energy bill that allows offshore drilling for oil, where offshore drilling for oil was not allowed for decades before that. And what brought that on? Well, of course, it was prices, the price of gasoline exceeding $4 a gallon, and constituents calling up even Democrat legislators and saying, do whatever you have to do, get my oil prices back down, or you're not going to be there the next election. Enough Americans said that, that finally we got movement out of the left. Now, when I say Democrat, if you're not having listened to the Dave Campion show, you may not understand what I mean by Democrat. In my mind, the term Democrat is synonymous with liberal, which is synonymous with socialist. So you may hear me say Democrat, liberal, socialist. It's all the same thing. If there's a Democrat who's not a socialist, I don't know who that is. Okay? So we've got the socialists who actually were moved off of their position concerning offshore drilling. Now, did they go as far as you might want or I might want? No, they did not. But they moved off their mark, and they are going to now allow drilling where drilling has not been allowed for decades. So, yes, when the people en masse, enough people at one time say this has got to change, we are going to get movement. So it's important for us to understand the truth of what's taking place in our country and that enough people understand the truth. And then hopefully when enough people see the truth and hear the truth and know the truth, hopefully, this is the part where you and I all have to cross our fingers, hopefully they will care enough to sound off and we can produce some change. We're going to find out, won't we? Let's go back all the way to the time of the U.S. Constitution being formed and debated and ratified. Well, there were really two different camps as the Constitution was being created. There was the camp that we could say was headed by Thomas Jefferson, and it rested primarily on the recognition of rights, the recognition of individual rights. It rested on the populace that the government truly had to be in the hands of the people. The wheel of the vehicle had to be in the hands of the American people. And I think while Thomas Jefferson might not have been the most active advocate of that during the convention and during the debate, he subsequently, historically, has been most identified with that type of position. It is easy to find who the leader of the opposition was. The leader of the opposition was Alexander Hamilton. Hamilton was a very interesting character, and I don't know how far I'm going to go into his background here today. And during the debates, a lot of people conducted themselves in a somewhat circumspect manner. In other words, they didn't come out and really say what they were thinking. They said, here's what I believe, but on the scale of 1 to 10, they might have only gotten to a 7. They didn't tell you what they believe if you push through to 8 and 9. Okay? That was certainly true of Hamilton. I think Jefferson was more transparent. In the middle of this was James Madison, who subsequently became known as the father of the United States Constitution. And Madison, during the convention and during the ratification debates and so forth, believed, was close friends with Thomas Jefferson, and believed strongly in the things that Thomas Jefferson believed in. But he also believed, as Hamilton believed, that the solution to having a working republic was to have a strong federal government. Now, it wasn't too long after the ratification of the Constitution, as a matter of fact, in George Washington's first term in office, where Madison and Hamilton started to draw apart from one another. Actually, it was Madison more drawing apart from Hamilton. Jefferson and Hamilton were polar opposites, so there was no drawing apart. They couldn't have been any further apart. But Madison had been a bit in the middle. Part of him was with Thomas Jefferson. Part of him was with Hamilton. Yes, we are going to get back to bailing out these companies. Okay? So Madison believed in a strong federal government as long as it was constrained by the chains of the Constitution. And he imagined that having structured the language of the U.S. Constitution as it had been structured, and understanding the intent and purpose of the Constitution and the intent and purpose of the language adopted for it, that the federal government would have to live within the enumerated powers in the Constitution. Well, in George Washington's first term, along comes Alexander Hamilton, Secretary of the Treasury. And he starts talking about creating the United States Bank. He starts talking about establishing the credit of the United States. He starts talking about a lot of things that smacked of the British system, which was incredibly corrupt. And in order to justify that position, which the authority for it could not be found anywhere in the Constitution, he resorted to the necessary and proper clause. Madison's view was that forming a Bank of the United States and establishing credit and getting private creditors and so forth, as England had, was not necessary, leave out the word proper. It was necessary and proper, so it had to be both. He didn't feel it was necessary. He felt that the most that could be said of it was that it was convenient. And the word convenient did not appear. It wasn't convenient and proper. It was necessary. Madison also felt that to create the Bank of the United States, to create private creditors for the federal government to go into debt, was going to greatly diminish the liberties of Americans and the Republican, not the party, the style of government, the Republican attributes of our national government. So he began to draw away from Hamilton, and ended up in the end having quite outspoken differences of opinion with him. So when we get back, we're going to talk about what Hamilton's plan is, what the constitutional authority was that he cited, and how to this very day, this is what's all coming around, how to this very day Hamilton's vision is affecting things such as the United States government bailing out AIG. I'm Dave Champion. This is the John Stepmiller Show. Stay with me. I'll be back after the break.
Here's Dr. John Mattson, a naturopathic doctor, and his views on Cartavite.
I would like to thank you, Don, for making my job so much easier, because your products just make it so simple, right? To fool around with a lot of exotic things that don't work, we can just put them on Cartavite and things start to work almost right away. I've had dozens of patients with heart problems who have corrected them. And what it's doing, there's so much garlic in there that has a yeast-killing effect. That yeast is a big problem in the gut, pushes the liver hard. It also has metal chelating effect. And most of the other herbs in there, I find that strengthen the arteries. They help to neutralize free radicals. Your remedy is as close to what we do in our program as you can get as far as one supplement goes. It's working on the gut. It's working on the liver. It's working on the arteries. What more can you ask for?
For more information or to order your Cartavite, call 1-877-928-8822. Cartavite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or tincture. Our website is heartdrop.com.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
All right, welcome back to the National Intel Report, John Stadtmiller Show. I am Dave Champion standing in for John while he's away at the National Association of Broadcasters Conference. He will be back shortly. All right, we have been talking about the government bailing out the private sector. And as a part of that discussion, I've gone way back to the Constitutional Convention, the debates, and so forth, and talked about the factions that were involved and how they might still be relevant to our situation today. By the way, if you'd like to be a part of the discussion, our call-in line is 800-313-9443. Now, I talked about, just before the break, Jefferson, Madison, and Hamilton, where they were positioned on this, because they were the big guns, they were the big hitters. There's lots of other participants, but these guys were the ones that characterized the various positions. When somebody thinks of position A or position B, they think of people like Jefferson and Hamilton and so forth. So I could probably spend an hour talking just about Hamilton and his philosophy of economics as it relates to federal government. I think I would probably bore all of us to tears. So I'm going to sort of do the Reader's Digest version. Hamilton's belief, which he did keep secreted away during the convention and the debates, he did not ever let anybody know of his true intentions. But after the Constitution was formed, and he was Secretary of the Treasury, he submitted a document to Congress, I believe, if my memory serves me accurately, something like 58 pages, detailing, which in those days, obviously, was quite a bit. Couldn't just sit down the word processor back then. And he outlined an economic plan for the United States. Now, when you say it that way, an economic plan for the United States, it sounds somewhat benign, doesn't it? Well, in reality, it wasn't benign at all. And Hamilton's belief, as I said earlier, Jefferson's was very populist. He believed that the helm had to be held in the collective hands of the American people, you and I. Hamilton did not feel that way. He paid a little bit of lip service to that, but that was not his true sentiment. Hamilton believed that in order for the United States, by that he meant the federal government, to prevail, to succeed, to continue in force and effect. In essence, he felt it needed more than a constitution, more than an agreement between the states, which we call the constitution, more than people adhering to the rule of law, as far as the constitution. It needed something more than that. It needed something that only he could bring to the table, or at least he felt that only he could bring to the table. And it needed something that was plainly extra-constitutional. We say it's extra-constitutional because it can't be found anywhere in the Constitution. And Hamilton, quite disingenuously, used the necessary and proper clause of the Constitution to push forward, to give constitutional authority to his concept of what else the United States government needed in order to succeed as the national government. And what it was that Hamilton felt it needed was the government had to be involved in creating monetary benefit and profit for the wealthy. Now, if you're like me, as an American, when I hear that, it immediately gets my back up. My skin starts to crawl. I'm like, you know, all right, who do we need to kill? It is offensive to my ears. Nevertheless, that is exactly what Alexander Hamilton believed. He believed that the government must have a role in making the wealthy wealthier. And his theory, at least, is as expressed. I don't think he, my personal opinion, I don't think he really believed this. But the way he expressed it was, unless there was some sort of attraction from the wealthy to the national government, it would not have their support. And if it did not have their support, it could not succeed. That was his pitch. Needless to say, I would disagree with that 1,000%. I suspect you would too. Now, where might Hamilton have gotten that view that the government has to have a hand in, be actively participating in, increasing the wealth of the wealthy? Well, it was right out of the playbook of Great Britain. That's exactly how the English government did business. It created financial opportunities for those people who were, we'll put in quotes, inside. The people who were a part of that upper tier. A lot of times we talk about various societies as being a caste system. There's the higher level, the slightly lower, and you can't move out of below or above your caste, your level. Well, England was very much that way, and Hamilton felt that the best way for the United States government to succeed, or at least express it was for America to do the same thing. Stay with me. Back in a moment.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Men, are you urinating more frequently? Do you wake up to urinate?
Now be honest. Is your sex drive what it used to be? Don't ignore the warning signs. Prostate problems begin around age 40. And by 60, one out of every two men will have these symptoms. And they do not go away. Take Superbeta Prostate. It has 3,000 times more concentration of the key ingredient in saw palmetto. It's so powerful, you'd have to take 100 saw palmetto capsules in order to get the same health benefits of one Superbeta Prostate. Try it risk-free for 30 days and give your prostate the nutrition it needs. For a risk-free trial of Beta Prostate, call 1-800-362-5848. That's 1-800-362-5848. With Super Beta Prostate, you get results or you get your money back. Or log on to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click onto the Super Beta Prostate banner to learn more about the product. Here's something. It doesn't matter if you're white, black, red, purple, thin, fat, or oblong. If you're eating food, you need to clean out the inside of your body. Why? Because undigested food and toxic chemicals build up in the digestive tract every day. If you think this can't hurt you, think again. It already has. Indigestion, bloating, gas, irregularity, and constipation are all connected to this toxic buildup. Here's what you can do about it. Take a supplement called AlloCleanse. It's all natural, and it gently cleanses the entire digestive tract. All that leftover junk inside your body gets flushed away, and your bathroom habits suddenly become a whole lot smoother. Laugh all you want, but it's true. And it's why millions of people use AlloCleanse daily. They get more energy, they're healthier, and they look better. You'd be surprised. To try AlloCleanse risk-free, call 1-800-547-6603. That's 1-800-547-6603. Or log on to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click onto the AlloEase colon banner and learn more about this product.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You're tuned in to the National Intel Report, the Real Talk Radio Show.
All right, we are back. I am Dave Champion. I'm sitting in for John Stadtmiller, who is at the National Association of Broadcasters Conference. He'll be back soon. And I want to thank John for allowing me to sit in for him today. If you'd like to listen to my show, in addition to John's, you can find my show on the Internet. And if you want to listen there, you can. If you want to get broadcast information, it's there on the website. The website URL is www.davechampionshow.com. All right, we've been talking about the banks bailing out companies such as AIG. We've got Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and so forth, although those are actually government entities, but we won't get into that right now. And in order to find out where the constitutional authority does or does not come from, we've been exploring what happened when the United States Constitution was being structured. And I've laid it out right to the point where we know where the culprit, Alexander Hamilton, we know what he stood for, we know what he wanted to do, we know what he wanted to accomplish. Now, the next step in the conversation would be to say, well, okay, that's what he wanted to accomplish. But what, in fact, was accomplished? So I think this is a great point. Before I go there, it's a great point to bring. We've got a caller on. Carl from Canada, welcome to the John Stadtmiller Show.
I think I heard you. You're on a different network, right, when I was calling in the show before?
My show is on Accent Radio Network, and Accent and Republic do a lot of cooperation, so all in the family.
Yeah, I tried to call. The 800 number didn't work up here to that network. I call into the show sometimes. I don't know if Stat Miller told you about my case. I'm the American that's been detained by the Canadian immigration for about 16 months now.
No, I've not heard about that.
No, well, I had a problem with the corrupt court system in the U.S. I got railroaded into prison. The court used false information against me, and I had probation as well. And I decided to immigrate to Canada because I heard other Americans, expatriates, were in Canada. And Canadian immigration just threw me in the immigration holding center. It's not exactly a jail, but it might as well be one. And, you know, I call into a lot of the different shows from up here. I'm able to buy phone cards and stuff and make calls. So I think I heard about your show when it was simulcast or something, and I tried calling a number. I asked Republic for a number, and I tried to call, and I couldn't. I think the number didn't work from here.
Well, Carl, what would you like to talk about today?
Well, the Constitution, I heard that's what you're talking about. I know. It seems like, you know, the government doesn't pay attention to the Constitution. They just make up their own rules and do what they want, you know.
That's very true. I have a question for you about your situation, just common curiosity, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
When you immigrated to Canada, I have a friend or two who have done that over the years, I mean, because they were involved in romantic relationships or business opportunities, what have you. I know that for an American to immigrate to Canada is not easy. There are requirements, and they're very stringent. When you immigrated there, did you go through their process and adhere to all of their very stringent regulations for immigration?
Well, I had just come up here. That's what I was planning on doing, because I've stayed here as, you know, being temporary or as a visitor up 6 months, I think you can stay. And I was staying up here and planning on going through all the process and everything. And, you know, and basically, you know, when I did ask for asylum, immigration just threw me in the detention center, you know, because I heard other Americans were coming up here doing the same. And I know because I had a minor criminal record, something that I dispute, that's on my record, for making criticism of Bush. I got arrested by the Secret Service and went to a lot of hell with that, and basically was thrown into prison and did prison time and had to do probation on top of that. And I got out of prison, basically decided to leave because I was just so fed up with everything, so fed up with the hypocrisy, the double standards, and, you know, I heard other Americans were leaving the country, going to other countries, and I came here, and I didn't know this was going to happen. Otherwise, I would have never came here.
As you tell me your story, Carl, you say things which really make me more and more curious. I hope you don't mind if I ask you a few questions. If you did time in prison and you ended up on federal parole...
Yeah, like supervised release. Which
supervised
is like
release is what they call the federal system.
Yeah.
Very good. I just didn't think our listeners would know what that term is. May I ask what the charge was for which you were convicted?
Well, intimidation, making like supposed threats against protectees of the Secret Service. I had made some various drawings and writing, satirical writings, like some cartoons of Bush standing before God and Bush standing before a firing squad.
Ah.
Stuff in that kind of satirical humor, you know. And,
okay, so somebody in the government looked at that you intended it as a threat, not merely a satirical comment.
Well, they interpreted it as a threat. That's how they try to, you know, twisted what was said. And
well, I'm guessing, and I don't mean in any way to be offensive, I'm guessing the government was able to persuade 12 Americans to see it the same way.
No, basically, I was basically forced into a plea agreement where basically I didn't have much of a choice, you know.
Okay.
I threatened with prison time, and then, you know, I had made criticism of Bush when he was governor of Texas. Some of the criticism was about Carla Faye Tucker, who he had executed on death row. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Carla Faye Tucker case, where Bush went on TV and made fun of the woman he had executed on death row.
I'm not familiar with that.
No, it was when he was governor of Texas. And I had made reference to that, mocking Bush standing before God and, like, please don't kill me and you must die and stuff like that. I didn't say I was going to kill him or anything, you know.
Right, right. Obviously, the I'm not saying they're correct, but obviously the government's view is that you had crossed a line somewhere along in that process.
Yeah, and then basically the 9/11 attacks happened, and I was there in the D.C. area, and I didn't really have a good chance at a fair trial. And basically I was threatened with more prison time, up to 20 years in prison, if I didn't sign a plea agreement. I signed a plea agreement. They told me I'd get probably 12 to 18 months. Then they did a pre-sentence report, which was full of false information and contradictions in the pre-sentence report. And then they used the sentencing guidelines to give me 60 months in prison.
Well, that sounds about right for the U.S. Attorney's Office. That's simply
I know,
how they go about their business. And Carl, I'm no stranger to, so I definitely hear your story with a sympathetic ear. I'm no stranger to the abuses of the federal government. As a matter of fact, just last week, in an ongoing civil matter with the United States government, in my role as a leader of the tax honesty movement, I was placed in federal lockup for 6.5 hours and paraded around in leg irons and a belly chain, which you're probably familiar with, having been in custody.
Yeah.
For the heinous, heinous act on my part of exercising my Fifth Amendment privilege not to answer a question. So when I exercised my Fifth Amendment privilege, the judge somehow magically waved his wand and said, well, in this matter, in front of me, I say there is no Fifth Amendment, so if you take it, you get to go to jail.
So the marshals locked you up and held you, and then
they
release you on bond or pre-trial or...
No, it's a bit more complicated than that. I don't want to go into this on John's show. I want to kind of stick to John's agenda, not mine. But if anybody's curious, again, I gave the website to the show, www.davechampionshow.com, and the show that's archived for the 13th of September, I go through it for an entire 2 hours. The very beginning, when I first received my first document from the federal government making their allegations, to over a three-year period, to the period of time when I was in federal court and taken into custody because I had taken the Fifth Amendment and so forth. So the whole story is there for people who want to get at it. But I'm very curious about your case. So what do you believe if you could put yourself in the shoes of a Canadian immigration official right now, I could get him on the air. What do you imagine he would say is the reason you're sitting there?
Well, basically, they're trying to say that I'm a criminal and that I'm not admissible and that I did all this stuff wrong in the U.S. My criticism of Bush or basically were, you know, threats, you know. That's basically what they say, that I'm, you know, a criminal and, you know, they treat me like this. And, you know, I had some friends that set up a website. We have some of the court documents on the website. It's freecarl.com. If anyone wants to look at it, freecarl.com, and they got some of the documents were posted from the court, as well as psychiatric evaluation and other documents were posted.
So, Carl, since the sentencing guidelines that came back from Bureau of Prison were for 60 months,
yeah.
I presume what you pled out to was a felony?
Yes.
Okay. So the position of the Canadian government then is that you are a felon,
yes,
and thus they are taking the position you are inadmissible or inadmissible without some additional work? What's their position?
Well, inadmissible.
Period.
Inadmissible, period. Even though, you know, we have records that kind of contradict some of the things that the government had mentioned in the pre-sentence report and other allegations, I told you after, I didn't tell you this, but after I got arrested, they ordered a psychiatric evaluation, the U.S. attorney,
uh-huh.
And they had a doctor come to the jail and evaluate me. And this doctor, they didn't tell me this at the time, I got the records later, the copy of the doctor's curriculum vitae, his resume, and in his resume, it showed he was also an employee of the Secret Service. He provided training to the field agents. Psychological training. He was involved with the White House, and I mean, I have a copy of this on the website.
No conflict of interest there.
And this guy, I mean, had ties to Clinton. He was invited to the White House by Gore and Clinton during the 90s. This guy went to Yale. He also went to Harvard, Mayo, Columbia.
So arm's length and clean hands we don't have with him.
Yeah, this guy was like, he went to college from, I think his bachelor's degree from 69 until his graduate medical in like 86. This guy has like a 25-page resume. And this doctor wrote a report that also had false information in it about how I was delusional and, you know, had mental illness. So they sent me to a mental hospital for 10 months, did a further evaluation, and that evaluation said I didn't have a mental illness. I went back to court to take my case to trial, and the attacks at 9/11 happened, and basically I was forced into this plea agreement, and then they gave me 60 months.
All right. Carl, before you called in, we were talking about the Constitution and where the United States government might, arguably, if we were to listen to the federal government and its claims, attain jurisdiction for things like the financial bailout of AIG. Do you have anything that you'd like to share with us about that?
Well, I know I read it in the paper today here. They had newspapers talking about AIG, why they were bailed out, and why, Lehman Brothers was not bailed out because they, supposedly, because I guess they have much more impact if they didn't bail out, you know, AIG, because like I said, it was in billions of dollars or something.
Right, and we're gonna get into the practical aspects of that in a little bit. Carl, thank you for calling in. FreeCarl.com is the website for people who are more interested in Carl's story and would like to know more about it. Thanks so much for the call. I want to get back to what we were speaking of concerning the Constitution and the authority, if any, to bail out companies like AIG. I'd laid out before the various positions, the factional views. And Hamilton had written this 58-page report that was about the money system and the credit system of the United States. When Madison saw this, he was horrified. And he took huge steps back away from Hamilton as far as position. And Hamilton fairly castigated Madison over this, saying that he was abandoning the Federalists, which was not true at all. Madison's point of view was, I believe in a strong federal government. A strong federal government is absolutely necessary. History shows that. There is no way for this republic to succeed unless we have a strong national government. However, it's a strong national government of strictly enumerated power. And Madison, more than any other founding father, the reason he's called the father of the Constitution is because more than any other founding father, he had historically researched the strength and weaknesses of all the various different forms of government, most especially with an eye to the Republican form of government. And having done so, he actually had a document that had all a summation of all the arguments, and he carried this with him, and he used this in the Constitutional Convention and in the debates. He was probably the leading expert in this country. Who knows, may still be even gone. He may still be the national expert of all time on what it requires to have a functional, working republic. And when he saw Hamilton's plan for money and debt, he was appalled. He felt it was thoroughly injurious to the concepts of liberty. He felt, and he wrote, that it was going to allow undue influence on a substantial level, and that it was going to corrupt congressmen and senators and others in government, that there was no way to have that sort of monetary system and that debt system in place and preserve Republican principles. Gee, doesn't that sound familiar? There are people saying that exact same thing in 2008. Well, James Madison said it in 1779. Okay? So there were the factions. So what happened? Well, Congress, and many historians believe, because the wealthy put their money into Hamilton's plan, in other words, they started offering spiffs and, I guess we call them bribes, to members of Congress and the Senate then to make sure that Hamilton's plan got through, because if Hamilton's plan was successful, well, they were the very class that was going to benefit from it. The only way to get his plan through the only way to establish the Bank of the United States was for Hamilton to bastardize the necessary and proper clause. And that's how he pitched it to Congress. He told the House and he told the Senate that it was necessary and proper. It was an implied authority under the United States Constitution. Now, Madison, who was really the architect of many of the aspects of the Constitution, hence his nickname, the Father of the Constitution, held exactly the opposite perspective. He said, absolutely not. This is not, the Necessary and Proper Clause was never intended to justify this kind of loosely implied power, one that you would like to have, that you might think is convenient to have. But since it is convenient, we're going to lasso it in with this Necessary and Proper Clause. Hamilton was completely opposed to it. So what did Congress do? How did that all wind up? And what is the government, is the government today relying on that precedent? When we get back, we'll speak to that. I'm Dave Champion. Stay with me. I'll be back in a moment.
Dried foods. These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Most of mankind's diseases have now been conquered. This medical breakthrough can save your life or the life of a loved one. Please listen. The answer to AIDS, hepatitis A, B, and C, malaria, herpes, TB, most cancers, and many more of mankind's worst diseases has been found. Details of this amazing secret has been freely disclosed in Jim Humble's book, The Miracle Mineral Supplement of the 21st Century, available at miraclemineral.org. Read how in five countries of Africa, over 75,000 cases of malaria and other diseases were successfully treated with this new mineral supplement. Learn more at miraclemineral.org. It also works with colds, flu, pneumonia, sore throats, warts, mouth sores, and even abscessed teeth. Download part one of this amazing book free at miraclemineral.org. Then, if you're satisfied, purchase part two for only $9.95 or the hard copy for only $19.95. Please enter RBN when prompted on where you heard about miraclemineral.org.
Question: is the world getting better or vastly worse? A world economic collapse could come any day. Question: are you prepared or are you ignoring the signs? Question: do you have 7 years of healthy food for your family? Answer. Go to survivalistseeds.com now. 12,000 seeds giving you 5,000 pounds of food for just 4 pennies a pound. Without a long-term food solution, your choices are limited. Visit survivalistseeds.com and check out our doomsday water filter system. Without water, you die. It's all online at survivalistseeds.com. Are you prepared? That's survivalistseeds.com. Go to survivalistseeds.com. Do it now or become property of the New World Order.
Alrighty, we are back. We've been discussing Alexander Hamilton, his monetary and debt plan for the United States during the first presidency, George Washington, after the ratification of the Constitution, and his plan. Now, here's the upshot of this. Congress voted to adopt his plan. So in essence, Congress bought into the necessary and proper interpretation that Hamilton put forth, which was completely erroneous and completely corrupt. Now, despite the fact that Congress bought into it. The federal courts did not. Up until the 1930s, the federal courts held the line. And the way they characterized it was that the federal government operates on the Madisonian view, not the Hamiltonian view. And so that lasted all the way, I forget the exact date of the court case, I think it was about 1932 or so, wherein the U.S. Supreme Court said in one of its decisions, this country no longer is functioning on the Madisonian view, but will henceforth function on the Hamiltonian view. And a lot of people have speculated as to what the court actually meant by that. And let me clarify that for you. What the court meant was that Madison's view was that the federal government was constrained, strictly constrained, by the enumerated authorities granted to the federal government in the U.S. Constitution, and that any implied authorities that it exercised had to be necessary and proper in order to execute those enumerated powers. So let me give you an example. The Constitution talks about taxation. It does not talk about tax collectors. However, if you're going to have taxes, there is no way to get them and to bring them into the Treasury without tax collectors. So would it be necessary and proper for the Secretary of the Treasury to ask Congress for authority to have collectors of the Internal Revenue out in the field collecting the taxes on the various types of imports and so forth? Well, yes, that would be both necessary and proper. That would be one example of something that's necessary and proper. The Bank of the United States was not necessary and proper. The monetary system that benefited the wealthy and the debt that he planned to incur for the federal government, right off the bat, I mean, day number one, let's incur some debt, was not necessary and proper. Okay? It certainly was not necessary. Economists can argue whether it might be proper. It is inarguable that it was not necessary. So the federal courts for all those years rejected the Hamiltonian view and said this country functions on the Madisonian view. That has changed. And so as we look today, we see that the government's claims of authority are rooted in the original Hamiltonian view of how government functions. So when we get back from the break, we'll talk about exactly how that has created the environment we experience today and why the federal government claims authority to do the kinds of things that you and I would probably reject as being unconstitutional. Stay with me. I'm Dave Champion, and we will be back after the break.
Gold has been.